ॐ जनजमनन्दस्य जनोजनाशलकया चक्षुस्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनुविष्टं स्थपितं येन भूतले सायं रूपगदामायं ददति सा पनन्तिकम् वंशकपुत्रुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभैश्च प्रीतनं भवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. So Maharaj Rishabhdev was preaching to his sons. We read in the first 9 verses how he explained primarily that human life has a purpose. This is the simplest point, that human life has a deeper and different purpose than the lives or when the soul is within an animal body. There is, just by saying this, there is an acknowledgement that the soul is the person. And not only that, but there's a difference between animals and humans. Obviously there's a difference, but most people, although clearly will accept that there's a difference between animals and humans, when it comes to the difference, they won't be able to say what it is. Practically speaking, what is the difference? Obviously, there's such greater, finer intelligence in humans. But if that intelligence is used for animal activities, what is the difference? Sapodivyam putrakayena satvam shudyed. Yasmad. The heart should be purified by devotional practices ultimately, or tapodivyam, austerities, forsaking the temporary for the eternal, for those activities that will give forth to eternal consciousness, so that brahmasokyam tanantam, one can taste eternal spiritual bliss. How to do that? After describing how one should avoid associating with those things that give birth to sense enjoyment, or rather that impel one towards sense enjoyment, one should associate with sadhus, one should associate with holy persons, and keep away from the association men and women in the sense that invokes the enjoying spirit in the other, and that enjoying spirit gives birth to false ego, which is the core of the core of that which keeps us in the material world. So after describing this purpose of life and what to avoid, he described the process of making advancement. Those verses 10 to 13, very, very wonderful verses describing the process of advancing in Krishna consciousness. And then he said that one should teach others and take responsibility in all relationships. In other words, the essence of one's dealings with another, especially if the person is dependent upon us, is to help one advance in spiritual life, practically speaking, deliver one from the cycle of birth and death. Then Rishabhdev Maharaj, in text 19, described his position as the supreme, Lord. The Rishabh means the best of personalities, of persons. And then in 20, he said, if you wish to respect me as the best of personalities, the way, because he was speaking to his sons, the way you can do this is you give respect to your eldest son named Bharat, because he's a great devotee. So he was indicating that he wanted Bharat to actually take up the rulership of the world, because he was preparing to renounce the world. And before he was going to renounce, he was giving his last instructions to his sons. He was getting ready to renounce. He told them, if you want to respect me, you respect Bharat. So there's a few verses where he's going to the remainder of his instructions, he's going to give three or four basic instructions, and they are based on, if you want to respect me, this is what you should do. And now he's going to say that you should respect the Brahmanas. And he gives quite a few reasons why the Brahmanas should be respected. So we'll start reading with text 21 and 22. Of the two energies, manifest, spirit and dull matter, beings possessing life force, vegetables, grass, trees and plants, things that have life force that impel the living entity to grow, are superior to dull matter, stone, earth, etc. Superior to non-moving plants and vegetables, or worms and snakes, which can move. Superior to worms and snakes are animals that have developed intelligence, and superior to animals are human beings. And superior to human beings are ghosts, because they have no material body. Superior to ghosts are the Gandharvas, and superior to them are the Siddhas. Superior to the Siddhas are the Kanaras, and superior to them are the Asuras. Superior to the Asuras are the demigods. And of the demigods, Indra, the king of heaven, is supreme. Superior to Indra are the direct sons of Lord Brahma, sons like Daksha. And supreme amongst Brahma's sons is Lord Shiva. Since Lord Shiva is the son of Lord Brahma, Brahma is considered superior. But Brahma is also subordinate to me, Rishabhdev said, the supreme personality of Godhead. Because I am inclined to the Brahmins are best of all. So at the end of this long progression, he's saying, I am the topmost, and what is my tendency is to serve the Brahmins. So therefore, if you accept that I am the best, if I am Rishabh, you have to also say that the Brahmins are the best, the Brahmins. Purport. In this verse, the Brahmins are given a position superior to that of the Supreme Lord. The idea, because he was telling his sons that Bharat was going to rule, and they were going to serve as Kshatriyas, subordinate to him. But it is not that the Kshatriyas or the administrative class or the warrior class take the topmost position, because the Kshatriyas, they tend to get involved in politics, in power, because they're dealing with that type of energy, a mode of passion. So therefore, they too, the Kshatriyas too, take instruction, and that is from the Brahmanas, those who make sure that society is governed in a spiritual fashion, that the spiritual end of society is kept intact, the spiritual goal. And the Brahmins don't have anything to do directly with the governing, because if they were to get involved in the governing, they too would get involved in the passion of politics and power and money, etc. And then they too would have the same problem. Who would advise them? So therefore, the instruction he's giving to his sons is that I respect the Brahmins, you should also take guidance from the Brahmins. And the Brahmins, they are detached. Although Rishabh recommended his eldest son, Bharata, as the emperor of the earth, he still had to follow the instructions. Bharata had to still follow the instructions of the Brahmins in order to govern the world perfectly. The Lord is worshipped as Brahmanya Deva, The Lord is very fond of devotees or Brahmins. This does not refer to so-called caste Brahmanas, but to qualified Brahmins. A Brahmin should be qualified with the eight qualities mentioned in text 24 that will come up when it describes the qualities of these Brahmins. So it's a matter of qualities, characteristics, guna karma sabhavaga, not just janma, not birth. The qualities mentioned in 24, such as sama, dhamma, satya, tatiksha, that means equality, control of the senses, truthfulness, and tolerance. The Brahmin should always be worshipped, and under their guidance, the ruler should discharge his duty and rule the citizens. Unfortunately, in this age of Kali, the executive is not selected by very intelligent people, nor is he guided by qualified Brahmins. Consequently, what is the result? Chaos. The mass of people should be educated in Krishna consciousness so that according to the democratic process they can select a first-class devotee like Bharat Maharaj to head the government. If the head of state is headed by qualified Brahmanas, everything is completely perfect. So respect me, you respect who I respect, and that's the Brahmanas. We'll read a little more from the purport. The conclusion is that everything, both material and spiritual, is generated from the Supreme Being. From the evolutionary point of view, perfection is reached when the living entity attains the platform of a Brahmana. A Brahmana is a worshipper of the Supreme Brahman, and the Supreme Brahman worships the Brahmana. In other words, the devotee is subordinate to the Supreme Lord, and the Lord is inclined to see to the satisfaction of his devotee. A Brahman is called Dija Deva, and the Lord is called Dija Deva Deva. He is the Lord of the Brahmanas. He is worshipped by the Brahmanas, and yet he still respects and worships the Brahmanas. Because again, they lead the people in the right way. And the result of not having society led in a spiritual way is that it gradually becomes degraded, gradually or quickly. And then people misuse completely the chance that they are offered by their human life. So since Rishabdev Maharaj was instructing his sons to take advantage of their human life, he's also simultaneously instructing them as they're ruling to make sure that those who are under this, who are under them, who are dependent upon them, because he's already said that. He's already said that no one, guru nasasyat, sajana nasasyat, pita nasasyat, janani nasasyat. He's already said that if you enter into these subordinate, dependent or superior relationships, you have a responsibility, and that is to ensure that those under you make spiritual advancement and become free from birth and death. So therefore, because you are going to be ruling, you have to take guidance from the Brahmanas so that the head, the proper direction, the ultimate goal will be properly respected for society, and that the citizens will therefore use their life properly. So he continues glorifying the Brahmanas. If you respect me, this is what you should do in respecting the Brahmanas. O respected Brahmanas, as far as I am concerned, no one is equal or superior to the Brahmanas in this world. I do not find anyone comparable to them. When people know my motive after performing rituals according to the Vedic principles, they offer food to me with faith and love through the mouth of a Brahmana. When food is thus offered to me, I eat it with full satisfaction. Indeed, I derive more pleasure from food offered in that way than from the food offered in the sacrificial fire. So if the purpose of the sacrifice is to give our Vishnu to please the Lord, and when part of that pleasing of the Lord is pleasing the brahmanas by feeding them properly. But Prabhupada would also say that the brahmanas have to be qualified, not again just by birth, and they should not only act as the tongue of the Lord and accept food on his behalf, but should also act as the tongue of the Lord and speak on his behalf and preach as well. So feeding the brahmanas, he explains, is feeding me. So here's where he explains the qualities of a brahman, and we'll read the purport too and see who he's talking about, the verse and purport. The Vedas are my eternal transcendental sound incarnation. Therefore, the Vedas are Shabda Brahma. In this world, the Brahmanas thoroughly study all the Vedas. And because they assimilate the Vedic conclusions, they are also to be considered the Vedas personified. The idea is that if you read just one small part of the Vedas and someone asks you a question, then you will give them an authoritative answer, but it will be just based on the section that you read. But in order to be able to answer properly questions, one has to have assimilated the entirety of the knowledge so that one can take into consideration the person's circumstances, who he is, what the absolute truth is, what the person is capable of, etc. One has to know the entirety of the knowledge to give a proper answer. So therefore, they're personified, the Brahmins who have studied in this way, they are personified Vedas, they are personified Vedic knowledge. They can answer the questions properly. The Brahmins are situated in the supreme transcendental mode of nature, sattva-gun. They're in goodness. So, first of all, learned. Second, in goodness. Because they are in goodness, because of this, they are fixed in mind control. Sama, they can control their minds. And one who can control his mind, he can be fixed in dhamma, or sense control. He can control the senses. One can't control one's senses if one can't control one's mind, and one can't control one's mind if one isn't fixed in goodness. So very high qualification. And then by goodness also, and mind control and sense control, therefore one can be truthful. Satya. They describe the Vedas in their original sense. They actually know the purpose of the Vedas. They don't squeeze out an artificial meaning. And out of mercy, anugraha, they preach the purpose of the Vedas to all conditioned souls. So very qualified. They practice penance, tapasya, and tolerance, tatiksha, because one can't be penitent, practice austerities, unless one is tolerant, because austerities means that one has to tolerate the everything that occurs. You have to be fixed, strong in mind, and fixed in your purpose. And therefore they realize the position of the living entity and the supreme, anubhava. These are the eight qualifications of the Brahman. So they realize their relationship with the Lord, who they are, who the Lord is. Therefore, among all living entities, no one is superior to the Brahmanas. So now we see why. Because they're so qualified. They're such superior living entities. And because they're not greedy and they're not selfish, etc., they're qualified to instruct others. What does the word kritagya mean? You know?
Thankful.
Huh? Thankful. Here is Srila Prabhupada's purport. This is a true description of the Brahmana, of a Brahmana. A Brahmana is one who has assimilated the Vedic conclusions by practicing mind and sense control. He speaks the true version of the Vedas. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Vedas chasavar aham eva vidya. By studying all the Vedas, one should come to understand the transcendental position of Lord Sri Krishna. One who actually assimilated the essence of the Vedas can preach the truth. He is compassionate to conditioned souls who are suffering the threefold miseries of this conditioned world due to their not being Krishna conscious. A Brahmana should take pity on the people and preach Krishna consciousness in order to elevate them. Sri Krishna himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, personally descends into this universe from the spiritual kingdom to teach conditioned souls about the values of spiritual life. He tries to induce them to surrender unto him. Similarly, the Brahmanas do the same thing. After assimilating the Vedic instructions, they assist the Supreme Lord in his endeavor to deliver conditioned souls. The Brahmanas are very dear to the Supreme Lord due to their high sattva-gun quality, a mode of goodness. And they also engage in welfare activities for all conditioned souls in the material world. So we can see clearly why the Lord has so much affection for them. And we can see clearly what Srila Prabhupada wanted his devotees to become, qualified Brahmanas. His followers were meant to become qualified Brahmanas, not Brahmanas in name only, but qualified. And these qualifications are very, very wonderful. They make one outstanding in this world. Truthfulness, mind control, sense control, sattva-gun, mode of goodness, knowledgeable in the Vedas, having assimilated, preachers, compassionate, tolerant, realized. Wonderful qualifications. What a goal of life to become like this. Next in 25. More about the Brahmanas. So much in this about the Brahmanas. I am fully opulent, Rishabhdev said, almighty and superior to Lord Brahma and Indra, the king of the heavenly planet. I am also the bestower of all happiness obtained in the heavenly kingdom and by liberation. Nonetheless, the Brahmanas do not seek material comforts from me. They are my devotees. What do they want from me? They don't want material comforts. They are very pure and do not want to possess anything. They are kinchana. They do not want to possess anything in the material world. And Krishna says, or actually Kunti Devi says, she says to Krishna, tvam akinchana gochara. You are the property. You give yourself to those who possess nothing in the material world, who value nothing in the material world but value you only. You give yourself to such a person. They are very pure and do not want to possess anything. They simply engage in my devotional service. Bhakti bhajam akinchananam mai bhakti bhajam. What a nice sound that has. What is the need of their asking for material benefits from anyone else? Prabhupada's purport. The perfect brahminical qualification is stated herein. Akinchananam mai bhakti bhajam. The Brahmanas are always engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. Consequently, they have no material wants, nor do they possess material things. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains the position of pure Vaishnavas who are anxious to return home back to Godhead. Niskinchanasya Bhagavad Bhajan Mukhasya. Those who actually want to return back to Godhead are niskinchana. That is, They have no desire for material comfort. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advises, Sandarshanam Vishayanam Matai Yoshitam Chahantahanta Visha Bhakshanato Pyasaru. Material opulence and sense gratification through the association of women are more dangerous than poison. Brahmanas who are pure Vaishnavas always engage in the Lord's service and are devoid of any desire for material gain. This is that same point again, that the heart should not have an enjoying spirit, and therefore in subtle or gross ways it should not try to become the center, the enjoyer, because that is usurping the position of Krishna. Devotional service means to serve Krishna, to place Krishna in the center. This was Arjuna's fault when he wouldn't fight in the battle. He was considering all points from his point of view, and he was neglecting that he wasn't the center, that Krishna was the center, and Krishna wanted something done, and his business was to facilitate Krishna's desire. So the opposite of that, of facilitating serving Krishna, serving God, is self-centered activity. So those who are serious for going back home, back to Godhead, their hearts, their brahmanas who are pure Vaishnavas always engage in the Lord's service and are devoid of any desire for material gain. Because their hearts are cleansed of this enjoying spirit, of the, as if they were the center. The Brahmanas do not worship demigods like Lord Brahma, Indra, or Lord Shiva for any material comfort. They do not even ask the Supreme Lord for material profit. Therefore, it is concluded that the Brahmanas are the supreme living entities in this world. Text 26. Now, more, moving from Brahmanas, he has two more instructions. So, if you follow Bharata, don't be envious. Follow Bharata. Don't be envious. Listen to the Brahmins, if you respect me. So now, if you respect me, you will respect all living entities. My dear sons, you should know, you should not envy any living entity, be he moving or non-moving. What does envy mean? Jealousy, yes? And if you're jealous of someone, what do you feel towards them?
Reasonable enmity.
Yeah.
Resentment.
Resentment. Yeah. What else? Do you wish them well? No. This is envy. The wishing harm to any living entity is a result of envy. And therefore Prabhupada calls the animal killing that goes on, the animal slaughter, the killing the animals is envy. It's envy of their right to have some existence outside of the pleasures of your tongue, their own life. Can't tolerate that. You want to eat them. How horrible. What a consciousness. You want to eat them. Just imagine what it would be like if people were hunting you and your family members to kill you and eat you. Just, and you were helpless. Just imagine the terror. This is to kill you. This is, even in certain parts of the world, I mean, maybe they don't eat each other so much, but they hunt each other and kill each other, humans. How horrible. Such envy. Such enmity. So a devotee, and he wants, and Rishabhdev Maharaj wants his sons to become devotees, to be devotees. So he wants every trace of envy to be free from their heart. So therefore you should not envy any living entity, be he moving or non-moving, not even a plant or an ant. Knowing that I am situated in them, you should offer respect to all of them at every moment. In this way, you offer respect to me. Because all living entities are part and parcel of the Lord. Ham bijapada pita. We'll read a little of Prabhupada's purport. The Lord is always in an exalted position, even though he agrees to live everywhere. Srila Madhvacharya, quoting Padma Purana, says, Vivikta dishti jivanam dishnyataya parameshvarasya veda drishti. One who has clear vision and who is devoid of envy can see that the Supreme Lord is separate from all living entities, although he is situated in every living entity. In other words, the Mayavadis will translate this verse to say that everything is God. You should respect everything and everyone, every living entity, because every living entity is God. So that is not exactly what Rishabhdev is saying. No living entity is separate from God, but no living entity other than God is God. Because Krishna, God, Savasya Chamrde Sanavisto, is in every living entity's heart. Therefore everyone is respected. So here, Prabhupada in his purport is quoting Madhvacharya, saying that the living entity is not God, separate from God, but yet not different from God. This is called Beda Beda, Chintya Beda Beda Tattva. We are not God, a living entity. No living entity other than the Supreme Lord is God, but no living entity nor anything else is separate from him. So there's a particular reason I wanted to read this purport. There's this one little quotation that Prabhupada puts in here that I like very much. Upapadyet paramatmanam jivabhyo ya pade pade beda naiva na chaitasmad priyo vishnu tu kaschana. One who sees the living entity and the Supreme Lord is always distinct from each other, is very dear to the Lord. And here is the quote, little quote from Padma Purana. Padma Purana also states, Yo harish chaiva jivanam veda vakta hari priya. And that means, one who preaches that the living entities are separate from the Supreme Lord is very dear to Lord Vishnu. That was so much part of Prabhupada's spirit and his movement. Nivasesha sunyavadi prashkatya deja tarane. Preaching this message against nivasesha and sunyavadi, against undifferentiated spiritualism and undifferentiated materialism. That everything is the Supreme. Yes, everything is the Supreme, but everything is also different from the Supreme. So why? That's, what is this? One who preaches that the living entities are separate from the Supreme Lord is very dear to Lord Vishnu. Now why? The living entities in another sense are not separate from God. There is simultaneously separateness and non-separateness. So why is one who preaches the separateness dear to Lord Vishnu? Why? Because if the living entities are thinking themselves one with Vishnu, they cannot love him. And Vishnu cannot love them. So Krishna so much wants to exchange love with the living entities that those who preach to the living entities that you are separate from God, even though we are not fully separate from God, nothing is fully separate from the Lord, but who emphasize the separateness so that the living entities can love Krishna, gives facilities to Krishna to love the living entities, and therefore that person who preaches in that way becomes dear. So therefore Prabhupada was so dear. That was such a great part of his mission, to preach how against Mayavad philosophy, Sunyavadi philosophy, Nivaseshavad, because it gives Krishna pleasure that he can exchange love with the living entities. Yo harish chaiva jivanam bira vakta hari priya. And then his last instruction. So respect the Brahmins, respect all living entities. And the last instruction: the true activity of the senses, of the sense organs, mind, sight, words, and all the knowledge gathering and working senses, is to engage fully in my service. Unless the senses are thus engaged, the living entity cannot think of getting out of the great entanglement of material existence, which is exactly like Yamaraj's stringent rope. Material existence is like the rope tied around our neck that will hang us. And what place is it there? The engagement of the senses and sense enjoyment, because that fixes us in an enjoying spirit. So therefore, don't engage in sense enjoyment. Engage your senses in Krishna's service. Short purport by Prabhupada, we'll read that. As stated in the Narada Pancharatra, sarva-pari-vinimuktam tat-purit-vena-nimalam rishikena-rishikesha-sevanam-bhakti-ucchate. This is the conclusion of bhakti. All the time, Lord Rishabhdev has been stressing devotional service. And now he is concluding by saying that all the senses should be engaged in the Lord's service. There are five senses by which we gather knowledge and five senses with which we work. These 10 senses and the mind should be fully engaged in the Lord's service. Without engaging them in this way, one cannot get out of the clutches of Maya. So that's the end of Rishabhdev's instructions. Text 28. Now, Sukadev Goswami was explaining this to Prickett Raj, and he said, thus the great well-wisher of everyone, the Supreme Lord Rishabhdev, instructed his own sons. Although they were perfectly educated and cultured, he instructed them just to set an example of how a father should instruct his sons before retiring from family life. Sannyasis who are no longer bound by fruitive activities and who have taken to devotional service after all their material desires have been vanquished also learn by these instructions. Lord Rishabhdev instructed his 100 sons, of whom the eldest Bharata was a very advanced devotee and a follower of Vaishnavas. In order to rule the whole world, the Lord enthroned his eldest son on the royal seat. Thereafter, although still at home, Lord Rishabhdev lived like a madman, naked and with disheveled hair. Then the Lord took the sacrificial fire within himself, and he left Brahmavarta to tour the whole world. So he took a very, very, very amazing form of renunciation, because he wanted to show, because his preaching was very strong, so he wanted to show that it is possible for a living entity to live fully ecstatically, fully satisfiedly, without getting any pleasure from the body or the material mind. So he set this very incredible example of a madman wandering around, getting no respect, getting no pleasure from the body, taking the elements as they came, but ecstatic within. The fire of his love for Krishna, of love of God, was burning within, even though he was the Supreme Lord exhibiting this. No pleasure external, and yet fully satisfied. Purport. So now he's left home. Actually, the instructions given to Lord Rishabhdev's sons were not exactly meant for his sons, because they were already educated and highly advanced in knowledge. Rather, these instructions were meant for sannyasis who intend to become advanced devotees. Sannyasis must abide by Lord Rishabhdev's instructions while on the path of devotional service. Lord Rishabhdev retired from family life and lived like a naked madman even while still with his family. So these instructions are really meant for those who intend to be fully renounced. But that does not mean that householders, etc., should not take these seriously. One time in Fiji, Prabhupada was saying how sannyasis should minimize their eating and minimize their sleeping. And I said to Prabhupada, well, how about householders? And Prabhupada replied, oh, householders, they can eat and sleep 24 hours a day. As if householders weren't spirit souls who had a responsibility to go back home, back to Godhead too. He was being sarcastic. It's in everyone's interest to minimize the bodily necessities and increase their devotional love for Krishna. So after accepting, text 29, the feature of an avadut, and avadut in ISKCON sometimes we use it as if it meant an eccentric person who doesn't follow things the way you're supposed to follow them. But he's a devotee, but he's an eccentric. But that's not what avadutta means. Avadutta means one who is on the transcendental platform and therefore doesn't need to follow the rules and regulations, because he's achieved that which the rules and regulations are meant to help him achieve. He's already achieved that platform, so he no longer needs the rules and regulations anymore. He's fully transcendental already. So Rishabhdev Maharaj accepted the features of an avadutta, a great saintly person without material cares. Lord Rishabhdev passed through human society like a blind, deaf, and dumb man, an idle stone, a ghost, or a madman. He just wandered around as if he wasn't in the material world, like a crazy person. Although people called him such names, he remained silent and did not speak to anyone. So when crazy people wander around in India, everyone makes fun of them, throws things at them, this and that, teases them. So Rishabhdev acted as if he was a crazy person, not caring for anything. And people gave him a hard time, and he remained silent because he was living on a different level altogether. So, to show that one can live fully separate from, that the body isn't actually necessary for the soul, like all the things that we worry about on the bodily and mental level, if we have love, if one has deep love for Krishna, if one has love for Krishna, these externals are just what they are. They're external. They don't trouble one at all. So here's how he lived to teach us and to set his own example. Rishabhdev began to tour through cities, villages, mines, countryside, valleys, gardens, military camps, cow pens, the homes of cowherd men, transient hotels, hills, forests, hermitages. He just wandered. Wherever he traveled, all bad elements surrounded him, just as flies surround the body of an elephant coming from a forest. He was always being threatened, beaten, urinated upon, and spat upon. Sometimes people threw stone, stool, and dust at him, and sometimes people passed foul air before him. Thus people called him many bad names and gave him a great deal of trouble, But he did not care about this. For he understood that the body is simply meant for such an end. He was situated on the spiritual platform, and being in his spiritual glory, he did not care for all these material insults. In other words, he completely understood that matter and spirit are separate, and he had no bodily conception. Now, no one should imitate this and just start wandering around. Because he had no bodily conception. Thus, without being angry at anyone, he walked throughout the whole world alone. So Prabhupada, in his purport, explains a few points. One is that although we can't imitate, there is a lesson in this for us, and that is, as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Matras Pashasta Kanteya Sitosna Sukadukadaha Agamapayano Anityas Tamstu Tikshasvabharata, that one has to learn tolerance. One has to learn tolerance. That is one of the great opportunities in living in or around a temple. Because if you don't become tolerant, you become angry continuously and political. And this one did this, and did you hear what this one did? And then groups, factions come, and this group, this one did this, and this against that. And instead, it's really an opportunity to become tolerant, to just simply not care about all these things that really only can cause us trouble on the bodily and mental level. And Rishabdev set the example of simply not caring what inconvenienced him and what people thought. 31. Lord Rishabdev's hands, feet, and chest were very long. His shoulders, face, and limbs were all very delicate and symmetrically proportioned. His mouth was beautifully decorated with his natural smile, and he appeared all the more lovely with his reddish eyes spread wide like the petals of a newly grown lotus flower covered with dew in the early morning. The irises of his eyes were so pleasing that they removed all the troubles of everyone who saw him. His forehead, ears, neck, nose, and all his other features were very beautiful. His gentle smile always made his face beautiful, so much so that he even attracted the hearts of married women. It was as though they had been pierced by arrows of Cupid. About his head was an abundance of curly, matted brown hair. His hair was disheveled because his body was dirty and was not taken care of. He appeared as if he was haunted by a ghost. When Lord Rishabdev saw that the general populace was antagonistic to his execution of mystic yoga, he accepted the behavior of a python in order to counteract their opposition. What does a python do? He just lies down and opens up his mouth. He doesn't do anything else. And if any food goes in, okay. If none goes in, he waits. Doesn't move. So Rishabdev, this is his third stage. First stage was in his home. Second stage, just wandering. Third stage, python. While lying down, he ate and drank. He passed stool and urine and rolled in it. Indeed, he smeared his whole body with his own stool and urine so that opposing elements might not come to disturb him. We'll read the purport to that after. But because Rishabdev remained in that condition, the public did not disturb him. But no bad aroma emanated from his stool and urine. Quite the contrary, his stool and urine was so aromatic that they filled 80 miles of the countryside with a pleasant fragrance. Most extraordinary. In this way, Rishabdev followed the behavior of cows, deer, and crows. Sometimes he moved or walked. Sometimes he sat down in one place Sometimes he lay down behaving exactly like cows, deers, and crows. And that way he ate, drank, passed stool and urine, and cheated the people in this way. O King Pritchett, just to show all the yogis the mystic process, Lord Rishabhdev, the partial expansion of Lord Krishna, performed wonderful activities. Actually, he was the master of liberation and was fully absorbed in transcendental bliss, which increased a thousandfold. Lord Krishna, Vasudev, the son of Vasudev, is the original source of Lord Rishabhdev. There is no difference in their constitution, and consequently, Lord Rishabhdev awakened the loving symptoms of crying, laughing, and shivering. He was always absorbed in transcendental love. Due to this, all mystic powers automatically approached him, such as the ability to travel in outer space at the speed of mind, to appear and disappear, to enter the bodies of others, and to see things far, far away. Although he could do all this, he did not exercise these powers. So Rishabhdeva Maharaj again was showing how one can be fully ecstatic, yet getting no pleasure from the body. And he didn't even use his mystic powers. Purport. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said, Krishna Bhakti Nishkam Ata Eva Shanta Bhakti Mukti Siddhikami Shakali Ashanta. The word Shanta means completely peaceful. Unless all one's desires are fulfilled, one cannot be peaceful. Everyone is trying to fulfill his aspirations and desires, be they material or spiritual. Those in the material world are Ashanta, without peace, because they have so many desires to fulfill. The pure devotee, however, is without desire. Anyabhilasita sanya. A pure devotee is completely free from all kinds of material desire. Karmis, on the other hand, are simply full of desires because they try to enjoy sense gratification. They are not peaceful in this life, nor in the next, during the past, the present, or future. Similarly, jnanis are always aspiring after liberation and trying to become one with the Supreme. Yogis are aspiring after many siddhis, powers, anima, lagima, prapti, etc. However, a devotee is not at all interested in these things because he is fully dependent upon the mercy of Krishna. There are two short purports I wanted to read from before and then in the class. So this was showing when he was adopting, Rishabhdev Maharaj was adopting the pose of a python. According to one's destiny, one enjoys allotted happiness and distress, even though one keeps himself in one place. This is the injunction of the Shastras. When one is spiritually situated, he may stay in one place, and all his necessities will be supplied by the arrangement of the superior controller. Unless one is a preacher, there is no need to travel all over the world. A person can stay in one place and execute devotional service suitably according to time and circumstance. When Rishabhdev saw that he was simply being disturbed by traveling throughout the world, he decided to lie down in one place like a python. Thus he ate, drank, and he passed stool and urine and smeared his body with them so that the people would not disturb him. From this, we can, because his, but the stool and urine was so fragrant. From this, we can certainly assume, purport to 33, that Lord Rishabhdev was transcendentally blissful. His stool and urine was so completely different from material stool and urine that they were aromatic. Even in the material world, cow dung is accepted as purified and antiseptic. A person can keep stacks of cow dung in one place and it will not create a bad odor to disturb anyone. We can take it for granted that in the spiritual world, stool and urine are also pleasantly scented. Indeed, the entire atmosphere became very pleasant due to Lord Rishabhdev's stool and urine. Quite extraordinary. Quite extraordinary. Quite extraordinary. So he just remained in ecstasy, completely disregarding the material world, even though he was within a material body. This is Avadutta. Okay, we'll stop here. And then in the next chapter we hear some more activities of Rishabhdev, and then we move on from 7 to I think 14. We hear about the son of Rishabhdev, Bharat. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
Very much. Is it that there's a sacrificial fire within himself?
I don't know exactly what the reference is, but it obviously means complete renunciation in some form or another. He became Gagana Paridhana. That's also called Digjam. Dressed by the directions only. So the Jains do this. And the Jains, actually, the people of the Jain religion, they accept Rishabhdev as their, more or less, their founder, Acharya. Means he didn't wear any clothes. So, and then Gagana Paridhana, taking the sky as his dress, having scattered hair, Atmani, in himself, Aropita, Ahavanaya, he kept the Vedic fire within, and he left. It's not clear to me exactly what that means, but it's obviously some sort of renunciation. Any other questions or comments? In other words, it's a sacrificial fire, Havan. So he was sacrificing himself to the Lord in some extreme way. Any other questions or comments?
In the first text we read, describing the scandal.
The what?
It's the gradations of living.
Yes.
Okay, how come
Prabhupada actually mentions that in the purport, because they don't have material bodies, they don't have gross bodies, so it's more subtle, so therefore they're considered superior from that point of view. Some of them. Some of them are superior to some humans. Some of them are just like some of the human beings. Does it talk about rakshasas in this? Was it one of the folks mentioned?
Mentioned
asuras were about the more powerful. It's obviously talking about, not from a devotional point of view in all cases, but it's talking about from a particular point of view, possibly power. Like human beings don't terrorize ghosts, but ghosts can terrorize human beings. So that means they're in a more subtle position, a more powerful position to do that. Maybe it's something like that. But usually a ghostly existence is considered horrible. It's full of torture, self-tortured. Any other? But it's clear, at least, why the Brahmins are considered so wonderful. So such wonderful qualities. We should attain these and aspire to attain these qualities. Any other? Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Rishabhdev Maharaj Ki Jai, Rishabhdev Maharaj's teachings Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.